Do you know what time it is? It's supernatural story time. And if you're easily scared, and even if you're not, there's only one thing left to do. Just turn off the lights, because these are stories that you listen to only in the dark.
The Darkness Inside, Volume 2, Story Number 1. Well, my mom's sister and I were on our way to a baseball game. It was my baseball game, and this was during my junior year of high school. This was in northern New York, so spring got a little chilly at times. The main road we took stretched about 35 miles and was nothing but cornfields and tree lines. We had a stretch of the road that was super foggy for no reason, so my mom slowed down to a proper speed. We finally reached the end of the fog, and we all looked to the left to see where we were. About 50 yards from the road was a man and woman in what appeared to be wedding clothes from at least 100 years before. The man was wearing a big top hat, and the woman was wearing a very old-looking white dress. They were holding their hands with their backs to us, walking towards the wood line. We drove past, and I just remember the silence in the car until my mom said, "What the F was that?" Till this day, whenever we're together, one of us tells the story, and of course, we all get goosebumps. Story number 2. This is my father's story, and he wasn't a long-haul truck driver, but rather an 18-year-old gas station attendant in the late 70s. And without a certain long-haul trucker, I probably wouldn't be here. The gas station was 24 hours, and my dad was the only one working the night shift, 11 to 7, I think. Guy comes in and just gives him the creeps. Seems sketchy. He was wearing tight jacket and pants, and you could tell he had something in his pants under the jacket. It was during the summer and was warm, so why is he wearing a jacket to begin with? It was later confirmed he was on drugs. A lot of truck drivers used the station, as it was the only one open 24 hours for a long stretch of the highway. They also had a big lot where they let the truckers park and sleep or take a break. On this night, at this time, it was just my dad. Sketchy dude and one trucker in there he kinda knew, as in came in frequent enough to be conversational, and asked if he'd stay in the station and hang out until sketchy dude left. Well, after looking at the stock shelves for several minutes while sneaking peeks, my dad behind the counter, the sketchy guy eventually looked fed up, got into his blue car, and sped off. Cool trucker guy hung out with my dad a little longer until another couple of guys came in to use the booth. They had to eat a sandwich. I should also point out, this was pretty middle of nowhere rural Southeast United States, and in the 1970s, CB and landline was it. My dad only had a landline in the store. Dad did not have any protection or weapon of any kind. So the hours passed, and my dad has shaken off the paranoia when all of a sudden, the guy in a car comes hauling ass into the lot, jumps out and sprints to the store, hollering he needs a phone. He didn't have a CB, nor did he see a phone at the other station. He also wasn't familiar with the area my dad's station was the first place he found. Calls 911 to report that he had walked in on a gas station 40 miles back, which was the next closest station, to find the attendant shot and dead. No one else around. And the only other piece of information is that a blue car was speeding out of the lot when the trucker pulled in. Apparently, they eventually apprehended the guy in the blue car. My dad confirmed it was sketchy dude from earlier in the night, and they charged him with murder and armed robbery. To the long-haul trucker who waited around with my dad that night, thanks, and hope you're keeping it real. Also worth adding that apparently sketchy guy in blue car was already a bad apple who was either being looked for or on probation or something. He was in the system. Next story. When I was a kid, I grew up in the cab of my father's truck. He was a single father, and I was on the road with him quite a bit. Occasionally, if he was going to pass near my grandmother's house, he would drop me off there for a week or so. I'm sure to give himself a break from a very young son in a very tight space. One time when he was nearing my grandmother's house, I remember crying because I didn't want him to drop me off. I loved my grandmother very much, but I was attached to my father for some reason. Separation anxiety, I'm sure. Thanks, Mom. As I was sobbing, I started recognizing my surroundings and knew we were close. I decided the next song on the radio was going to be Dad's Song, so every time I heard it, I would think of him. I guess that's why they call it The Blues by Elton John came on the radio, so that chipper tune became the song I used to remember him. That was in the early 80s, and I can't remember hearing that song over the last 20 plus years. 3 years ago, I was driving to see my dad in the hospital, and I stopped at a truck stop for gas and snacks. What song should start playing over the truck stop speakers, but I guess that's why they call it the blues. I got a sick, nervous feeling. Was this a good omen or a bad one? I'm not superstitious, so I tried to dismiss it and chalked it up to chance. April 11th was 3 years since I lost him. Surely it was just a random occurrence that I should hear that song going to see him for the last time, right? I'm not superstitious or religious, but I sure would like to see the old man again someday. Next story. My grandfather told me this story about how he was driving west to east along an empty stretch of road in southern South Dakota. He stopped at a stop sign at an intersection with nothing in sight. No buildings and no other vehicles. Then there was a bright light that hit him. He looked up and saw a bunch of blinking lights. Next thing he knew, he was at the counter of a diner about an hour down the road. It was about 6 hours later, and he had no idea what had happened. He asked the person at the diner when he came in, and the guy told him he came in about 10 minutes before and just started drinking coffee without talking much. My grandpa told him what happened, and the guy said something, "Yep, that happens around here sometimes." Nothing weird ever happened to him again. He avoided that area for the rest of his life. He said he doesn't believe in aliens and doesn't know what happened, but I had a suspicion he thought he had been abducted and just never accepted it. He told me never to tell this story to other people, but he died years ago, and most of the people who knew him are dead, so I figured it was okay. Next story. A friend of mine was driving an overnight through Arizona on a basically abandoned road, and his truck started having electrical issues. Lights cutting on and off, no CB, etc. After about 5 minutes of that, a convoy of law enforcement / federal emergency vehicles passed him. In the middle of the emergency vehicles, there was a flatbed semi with a massive saucer-shaped item chained to the bed and covered with tarps. About 5 minutes after passing the convoy, his radio and truck electrics came back up. He still recounts it as the craziest thing he's ever experienced on the road. Next story. I have an uncle that was a truck driver in his youth, and he told all sorts of stories about the things he encountered while on the roads of Brazil's countryside. He said that there was a road in the northwest part of the country that the truckers always said to avoid. Once he had a scheduled delivery and he was late, so he said to himself, "Forget it," and took the aforementioned road, because it looked like it would be a good shortcut. At some point of the night, while driving, his truck simply stopped working. Dead. Like the battery died or something. After 5 minutes, in the complete darkness, he saw lights in the sky, slowly passing over his truck. He tried the ignition again. Nothing. So he just sat there, scared, watching the night lights go by, and they eventually went away. And after something like 20 or 30 minutes, his truck started working again, and he went on his way, never to return. Next story. I was at a truck stop in Arizona. I was pulling through the fuel island, and right as I'm about to leave, roughly 15 cop cars come flying into the parking lot with a SWAT van. They surrounded a truck that was already parked for the night. I heard later that the driver had lost a tire or something off his trailer, and it had killed the guy on the side of the road. Don't know how true that story was, but it sounded possible. At the old Flying J in El Paso, I had pulled through the fuel island and was filling out logs and whatnot. And after filling up, suddenly, I heard someone screaming help on the CB. It's not unusual to hear kids screwing around or whatever, but this sounded like a full-grown man and didn't sound fake. It only happened for about 15 or 20 seconds and then silence. Some people started asking the guy where he was, but never got a response. Suddenly, another big rig in the parking lot starts to take off right as a couple of cop cars pull into the truck parking area. The big rig takes out a smaller sign and then jumps a curb out into the service road for I-10. Turns out a student got pissed at his instructor and stabbed him before leading the cops on a short, high-speed chase. Next story. In 2003, when I was a senior in high school, or perhaps the summer after we graduated, a friend and I were coming home from somewhere, I don't recall, and traveling down Murfreesboro Road between Smyrna and the borough. This is in Tennessee. It was really dark and really foggy that night. Suddenly, a really strong feeling came over me to tell my friend to change lanes. As I opened my mouth to say something, she started changing lanes, and told me she didn't know why, but, long story short, she had the same feeling. A few seconds later, just about the time we were going to shrug it off, a big boat of an old car came flying down the lane we were in at what had to be well over 100 miles per hour, without a single light on, front or rear. It was moving so fast that it disappeared into the distance just as quickly as it had appeared. We pulled over, thanked our lucky stars, and headed back home with the high beams on the rest of the drive home. Next story. Well, in the 1990s, I spent a lot of time hitchhiking around Europe. I'm a Brit. One trip, I was hitching from Newcastle, my hometown, to the south of France. I got to a point just south of Paris, some little entrance ramp in the arse end of nowhere. It was around 2 a.m., and I was flat out exhausted. I placed my sign by my feet and was sitting on my pack, sleeping in place. I was woken by the unmistakable blast of a lorry horn. Jumped up and ran without thinking to the lorry that had pulled up just yards away. The driver asked where I was headed. I replied, south, and he laughed and told me to get in. After a fairly brief conversation about my trip up until that point, where I was going, etc., the guy realized I was literally dead on my feet, exhausted. He pointed to the bed behind the cab seats and said if I wanted to get my head down, I was welcome to crash out. One of the greatest unwritten rules of hitching at the time was that the trucker's sleep area was sacrosanct. You didn't even put your bag there. So this guy, Eves his name, had just come to me offering to let me rest up was out of the ordinary. I had a quick split-second evaluation of, am I going to be horribly raped and tortured or is this guy legit? And decided I was safe. This was, in hindsight, probably based much more on my state of exhaustion than any true evaluation of his trustworthiness, but hey-ho. I jumped in the back, lay out flat for the first time in 2 days, and was asleep within seconds. 5 hours later, I woke up to an empty cab, parked in a truck stop as the sun was beginning to rise. Eves returned within a minute or so, espresso in hand, and started helping me to get my bags out of his cab. I should point out that my spoken French at that time was basic at best, and Eves spoke no English. Most of our communication was a combination of hand signals, confusion, and laughter. We went into the truck stop cafe, a relay for anyone who's traveled in France, basic, but a cut above your usual truck stop as far as food and drinks are concerned, and Eves insisted on paying for a monster breakfast for me while he only had another coffee and a croissant. As I was working my way through the breakfast, Eves was up at the counter chatting to the proprietor. He clearly knew them, so I didn't think anything of it. Obviously, he was chatting to his friend rather than doing monkey signs to the monolingual Brit, or so I thought. After a while, he came over and said he had to go. I knew this was my stopping point as far as he was concerned. He was heading west, where I was heading south. At which point, I thanked him profusely for all his help, the breakfast, and wished him a safe journey. He wished me luck and went on his way. After I finished my breakfast, I went up to the counter to order another coffee before I set out for the rest of my journey. At this point, I was about halfway down France, and when I handed over my money, the proprietor waved it away, saying it was on Eves. Yes, he'd paid for my next coffee before he left, on top of me buying me breakfast. I gave him a little salute, thinking top bloke, and sat down to drink my coffee while having a little chuckle. Anyway, soon enough, I figured I'd best get back on the road, so I went back to the counter to order a jambon beurre to take away for the road and say goodbye to the proprietor, who had also been super nice to me throughout. Again, I went to pay, and it was waved away. Eves had not only bought my breakfast, paid for a coffee he figured I'd have after I left, he also told the proprietor to give me a sandwich before I left, and paid for it. As this was all being explained to me, I just couldn't help breaking out in the biggest smile and laughing like hell. What a bloke. I thanked the proprietor, asked him to sincerely thank Eves the next time we saw him, and went to hit the road. At which point, I was then told to sit down and wait for about another half hour as Eves had arranged a lift south for me with a colleague he knew was passing by. The man was an absolute gent, went above and beyond the helping your fellow man, and did it all without even sticking around for me to say thanks. Absolute legend. Thanks, Eves, wherever you are. Next story. I've crossed the United States many, many times in my career. I used to tour manage a band that consisted of 4 musicians and 2 crew, so it was a total of 7 of us. We would often drive a white Sprinter van with a U-Haul trailer on the back, And if you're familiar with U-Haul, you know they have different pictures on the sides of them, often a state and something significant from that state painted on the side. We were about an hour outside of Roswell, New Mexico at 2 a.m. It was in the summer, and we were coming from having just played the New Mexico State Fair. In every direction around us, it was pitch black. No lights from cities or even rest stops. No other cars, nothing. We had absolutely no phone signal. All of our phones said no signal at the same time. It's a two-lane highway. The only illumination came from our headlights. We hadn't seen another car for a very long time. Suddenly, on the horizon, we see a light appear directly ahead of us. We kept driving normally, and the light approached us quickly. We rightly assumed it was another car coming our way on the other side of the highway, but then as the vehicle passed us, it was a white Sprinter van towing a U-Haul trailer with the exact same state artwork as ours on the side. Same tires, same model van, same trailer, same everything. And as soon as we pass it, it's gone. All of us very uncomfortably said the same thing at the same time. What are the chances? I'll never forget it. We couldn't do anything but just uncomfortably acknowledge we all saw the same thing and none of us were losing our minds. Next story. My dad told me the story a couple of times, and each time it always kind of weirds me out. When he was in the military one night, him and a buddy went out to get food. About halfway into their drive down a dark road, my dad and his buddy noticed a woman in a red dress with black hair walking. My dad and his buddy found it odd because it didn't seem safe, and it wasn't that warm. My dad said deep down he knew stopping was a bad idea, so they drove by a little more slowly to get a glimpse to see if she needed help. As they drove by, my dad and his friend both swear she had no face. Instead, there was just a black hole as if she had been in a wreck, and her face was taken off. It freaked them both out so badly, my dad floored it, and they stopped to eat, and they agreed on the same thing. Come to find out, a woman had been killed earlier that year in an accident. They were talking about it when a stranger told them the sightings of the woman were actually common. I'm not one to believe in the paranormal, but the story is still kind of weird. Next story. Well, when I was young, I'd go with my dad. He was a trucker and he'd take me on hauls sometimes. On one such trip, we were heading across I-80 in Nebraska and there was a snowstorm. We got to a part of the highway where a cop had blocked it off, saying it was closed and we had to pull off for the night. We ended up coming into an old Motel 8 that was closed or abandoned, and we went to sleep in the cab. The next morning, there were three sets of footprints in the snow around the truck. The footprints came out of the woods, circled the truck several times, and looked like they had paused at the windows and whatnot, and then led back into the woods. Not sure whoever they belonged to, what they were up to, but I remember my dad acting weird and he didn't take me out on the road after that. Next story. I was in rural Maine looking for a lumber mill just before sunset. It took hours to get out there because Maine is riddled with these narrow, windy roads that try and get as close as possible to every building and every village from the US 1 to Canada. So I pulled in just as the last guy's leaving. I asked him where to park, and he says that I would see him in the morning. I parked my truck in this fairly large gravel parking lot with thick forest right on all sides. There were no visible artificial lights except for my truck and my flashlight. After I got parked, I went in and sat out in the lawn chair and just enjoyed the warm night air and looked at the absolutely beautiful night sky. It was a rare treat to enjoy basically no light pollution. As I'm looking at the stars, like a switch was flipped. What sounded like 50 coyotes 60 feet away started howling like mad. It was at this point I got right back into the truck and didn't open the door until sunrise. Next story. I'm not a trucker, I'm a rider who spent the better part of the last years traveling the deadliest strip of U.S. Highway, Texas Highway 45, stalking long-haul truck drivers. Texas Highway 45 is a dangerous roadway, just because there's a disproportionate number of fatal wrecks, but there's a more insidious problem hiding in plain sight. Long-haul trucker serial killers have been working that strip with near impunity since at least the 60s. I spoke to an FBI agent who told me that at any given time, there's an estimated 90 serial killers actively working the U.S. highway system, and at least 30, this was his personal estimate, killed along the stretch from the Mexican-U.S. borders to British Columbia. Another officer heard those numbers, laughed, and said, "Those are the PR numbers." I asked for clarification, and he said, "Your numbers are low, real low." He's probably right. In Texas alone, hundreds of unclaimed bodies, mostly unidentified, and all having met with violent ends, have turned up over the years, and more than one mass grave has been uncovered. Side note, I've been to one of these mass grave sites. I'd read about it and wanted to test a theory, and I know they're real. The bodies were found in a field within a few hundred feet of passing cars and even a busy neighborhood. The field sits in a shallow land depression, and in a twisted trick of nature, no sound escapes it. Or, that's what I've been told. I decided to check it out for myself, got a motel room directly across from the field, and walked it. Standing in the depression were more than 24 bodies that had been discovered. I was close enough to the road to read the license plates, and I could see and hear kids playing in the neighborhood across the road. A car pulled up at a nearby driveway, and I could hear a man and his son exiting the vehicle, chatting, doors shutting, dog barking, as they entered the house. I started screaming, as loud as I could, as if my life depended on it. I screamed and screamed and screamed. They didn't hear me. If they had, and they'd turn around, they'd have seen me waving my arms. Police believe the field's a dumping ground for more than one and possibly several killers. It's my belief the killers chose the field to further torture their victims. What must it have been like to be fighting for your life and to see help right there, and no one comes for you? You're invisible. Anyway, point is, there's major trucking routes leading to Canada from Texas. Statistically, there's an above-average chance American serial killers are working in BC. Likely other parts of the country, but since my focus is on Texas, I can only speak to Texas routes. And in fact, U.S. feds are convinced at least 5 unidentified suspects are operating along those routes right now. From my research, I think it's likely that over the next 5 to 10 years, Canada will witness a surge in body discoveries. Not necessarily because there will suddenly be more killers, but because of HSKI, which collects and compiles data on active serial killers. Other databases were either difficult or time-consuming for authorities to input and or retrieve data. No laws requiring universal reporting protocols, etc. But most significantly, older databases focused on perpetrator signatures and MO, which are not typically relevant in highway killings. HSKI focuses on geography, abduction, body disposal sites, etc. As the database grows, it will become exponentially faster and more efficient. Like any database, there's a potential tipping point. So instead of a steady increase, there will most likely be bursts of findings. So, if it makes you feel better, I wouldn't stop my car to help Jesus Christ himself. Sorry, JC. Don't get me wrong. I'd stop at the closest populated area and not only report it, but raise holy hell until I actually physically witness police following up. Because that doesn't always happen. In fact, I've interviewed dozens of Texans along that route, and a significant number of them express indifference about the situation or believe the killers are doing them a favor. Not all police feel that way, but I can tell you some do. I worked alongside them, and for some, the attitude is, basically, it's mostly whores and druggies, who cares? Had a Texas state trooper tell me point blank, saves us the paperwork. To clarify, serial killers are not lurking in every neighborhood in America. You're not going to see a nuclear engineer on every corner either, unless you're hanging out at MIT. I'm referring to stopping on the highway, where they are concentrated. And no, not all truckers are serial killers. Not even most of them. It's like pedophiles. Plenty of great guys out there coaching Little League, but of course, the job's very appealing to pedophiles in particular. Further, I'm certain those hard-working truckers out there, note, America treats truck drivers abhorrently, are happy to have these degenerates rooted out and taken off their roads. Even worse than in the U.S., Mexico does a really bad job of addressing their serial killer problem. A former Texas Ranger I spoke to said the suspects, good old-fashioned serial killers, are disguising their kills as cartel hits. Side note, more Americans travel to Mexico to commit sex crimes and possibly even murders than the other way around. American predators hunt there because poverty, poor reporting, a lot of prostitution, and other illegal crimes make it a hotbed for predator activity. Next story. My dad was a trucker, and in the summers I tagged along with him. One evening we were driving from Houston to Jacksonville, and somehow we got turned around on the back roads of Louisiana. The last major place I remembered us being in was Troy, at about 1 a.m. Well, it was almost 3, and we had no idea where we were. We eventually came to this little bitty town. It had one broken stoplight, a diner, an abandoned factory, and some empty shopping centers. In total, it was maybe 4 blocks from one end to the other. We were both hungry, and because we didn't want to wait to go to a truck stop, we pulled in behind the diner. Now that I think about it, the fact that a small town diner was open at 3 a.m. should have been a sign that something was amiss. We got in this diner, and it was pretty nice, actually. A bit old school, reminiscent of the 60s. There was a single waitress on duty and a cop eating in a booth. We naturally all got to chatting. I remember the meal so clearly because it was the first time I had grits. They were loaded with cheese and bacon. The cop gave us directions back to the highway and bought me a chocolate milk for the road. I remember the tables. They were composite wood covered in polka dot contact paper. Well, we eventually made it to civilization later that morning at a stop. My dad asked about the town. Cue a lot of confused local truckers. He was sure he was getting the name right, but no one had heard of it. A few months later, he was driving me back home to Texas, and he drove through Louisiana attempting to find a town. We never could. We're still not sure what happened. If we drove through a ghost town no one remembered, or something weirder. But I remember that night clearly. Next story. I'm a territory manager, and my territory goes from New Mexico to Alabama and up to Kansas. So it's not uncommon for me to have to drive from Dallas, Texas to Albuquerque, New Mexico, and then from Albuquerque to Montgomery, Alabama, and then back to Dallas all in 1 week. Well, I worked for a premium off-road lighting company, so we worked in the deserts at night a lot, usually with trophy trucks and Ultra 4 race teams. Last year I was coming home from King of the Hammers, and it was about 4:30 a.m., and I was on a state highway through the desert in southern New Mexico. If you've never driven it, you're basically as far away from anything out in the desert as you can possibly be. Impossibly straight one-lane highways that stretch from hundreds of miles. I was awake and alert even though it was so late, and I was totally alone on the road, and had been for hours. Suddenly, without warning, while I was trucking along, going about 80 miles an hour, the most insanely bright light came on my right off my tailgate. It was so bright it lit up everything in the cab, and it was blinding. I thought one of our race teams had snuck up behind me or something and turned on their light bars to screw with me. I drive a wrapped and branded distinct show truck, so it happens a lot. The light stayed on my ass for a good 30 seconds and would stay right on my ass even when I swerved a bit or when I moved on to the shoulder bit to see if they would pass. It was weird. It was like the light was bolted to the back of my truck or something. After about 30 seconds, I had enough, so I flipped on my rear-facing lights to give them a taste of their own medicine, and instantly the light behind me went off, and there was nothing. Nothing whatsoever. Even though I was kind of blinded, I have some really powerful backup lights, and they came on the second the other light went out, so there is no way whatsoever another vehicle was behind me, and there was just wide open flat desert all around. So it's not like they could have pulled off and hidden, and I would have seen them anyway. Just nothing. I was totally freaked out, but I'm not an easy scare and very comfortable with being in the desert alone at night. So I pulled over, grabbed my knife and my flashlight, and had a look around. I shone my flashlight all around and even used some of my portable hyperspots. Again, I work for a lighting company and always carry around tons of demo lights to look all around me for anything, and there was nothing. No cars, no trucks, aircraft, UFOs, nothing at all, except wide open, empty New Mexico desert. My truck was totally fine, but I know I wasn't just seeing things because the back of my truck was hot, like way hotter than normal. All the metal on the side beds and tailgate were almost uncomfortable to the touch. I've never figured it out. The only logical possibility I can think of that I've read about is ball lightning, before and apparently it's attracted to metal objects. Maybe I found some ball lightning and it stuck to the back of my truck. Maybe, but that's the only thing I can think of. Next story. So my dad and I were driving down 441 in South Florida. It was probably about 4 a.m. in the morning, and we hadn't seen another car for over an hour. And we see this really bright orange light up ahead. As we got closer, we saw that it was a fairly old-looking truck on the grass on the side of the road, and the hood was completely engulfed in flames. My dad pulled over, and as I was quite young at the time, he told me to stay inside, and he went to see if he could help the owners. I was sitting in the passenger seat watching intently as he approached the car, but he couldn't find anybody. Then, practically at the same time, we noticed there's a woman in a torn casual blue dress standing over by the tree line, just kind of staring at my dad and breathing really heavily. My dad looked really nervous but approached her cautiously with his hands out before she turned and just bolted into the forest towards the farmland. He ran to the tree line to look for her, but she had completely disappeared. As we were driving away, it looked like the fire might have gone out, but we weren't ever sure, and we never found out who she was or what happened to her.